WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Joe Beam was a Black gay writer. In 1986, he published the first anthology of Black gay writing called In the Life. He was at work on a second edition when he died of AIDS in 1988. He was 33 at the time. The book didn't end with Joe's death because after he died, his mother, Dorothy Beam, did an exceptional thing. She picked up where Joe left off. With the help of poet Essex Hempel, she finished the book. It's called Brother to Brother. Dorothy Beam and her husband, Sonny, live in Philadelphia, just west of the downtown Center City section where Joe lived and worked. We invited Dorothy Beam on to talk with us about the book and how her life has changed since its publication. She told me how she first learned her son was gay.
Well, it came out of a clear blue sky, to be honest, because we didn't know. I was very naive about gays and lesbians. In fact, I didn't know anything about it. And my son had come in from college, and he said, "Dad, Mom, I want to talk to you." And he said, "Well, I'm gay."
Just as simple as that.
Oh, yeah. He just came right out with it. And well, how can you polish it up? Well, I was taken aback, but I said to him, "Joe, if you had been a lawyer, I would love you. If you'd have been a doctor, I'd love you." I said, "I'll love you even more that you're gay, because you're going to need a lot of support, an awful lot of support."
And were you concerned about the kind of life that he would have or the kind of life that he was having?
I was terrified, because I had heard enough to know there was a great deal of gay bashing going on. And I know it's a cruel world out there. And I told him, you know, he's an African male, which is two strikes. Being gay is it's a triple whammy. That's what I referred to it as, a triple whammy. Not at that time. Later on, I referred to it as a triple whammy. The only thing, after he talked to my husband and I, and he had left the room to go out, my husband didn't feel quite the same way I felt about it. In fact, he still can't accept it. That's why he's not here with me. He doesn't go anywhere with me. And we talked about it. He said that he can't handle it. And he gives me this story. My father wasn't gay, and my grandfather wasn't gay, and I don't know if anybody in my family was gay. I said, "Well, I don't either. But we have this gay child here. We've got to support him."
Were you literally able to accept it right off the bat?
As soon as my son told me, there were no ifs, ands, or buts about it, I put my arms around him. I told him it was all right. We would work this thing out together, and whatever he wanted to do, it was all right with me. See, I can't stand around and say to him, "Well, your mother, your father, and I got married, and that's the way it's supposed to be," because when I brought him in the world, I didn't know what he was going to be. I took my chances like everybody else. Just so happens I had a gay son. Yes.
Did you hide the fact at all from your friends and family? Was this an issue that you wanted to keep within your family?
Oh, no. I told everybody that I could think of. I took him everywhere that I ever went. Oh, no. And this is what most people could not understand. My acceptance. They just marveled at it, how I accepted. I said, "What? This is my child. You know, if he was born with one arm, I would accept him. If he was born blind, I would lead him around. This is my son."
You talked about the difficulty of being a gay Black man.
Yes.
In this country.
Yes.
What were your then greatest fears for him?
Somebody would hurt him. It bothered me all the time. And I used to say to him, "Joe," when he finally moved from the apartment building in Overbrook, I said, "Joe, be careful how you go out at night. Don't go out alone. Two or three of you go together." Because there was always somebody out to get him. Not just him, any gay or lesbian person. I said, it's better to go to the gay bar. Some of the gay bars, I went with him. I went with him to the gay restaurants. I went with him to the gay bars because I was not ashamed.
And did he like having you there?
Oh, my goodness, yes, yes, yes. I went with him. In fact, a lot of places that I go, and even now, I've only been to one since that time to give a girl some information. But they remember me. They said, "Oh, yes, Mrs. Mew, I remember when you used to come with Joe." I said, "Yeah." Well, see, because I wasn't ashamed. So I went with him. When his book came out for his first reading at Giovanni's room, his dad went there. And that's when I found out how his father really felt. Because when we came back that evening, he talked to me about it. He said, "I'm not going through this again." Really.
Is there anything you could say you think to change your husband's mind?
Oh, no, I can't change his mind. In fact, I wouldn't know what to say to change his mind. In fact, he says to me even now, he said, I don't know how you can go all these places, how you can be a part of all this. He said, your son has passed. Let it drop. I says, I can't let it drop because my son really died for this book. He worked so hard. He put so much into it. This is a legacy to my son. So I'm working every day. Every day I do something.
When did you find out your son had AIDS?
Oh, now that was a real surprise. I noticed that when Joe came around to the house, to me, he was getting thin. He said, oh, Mom, you always worry. I'm not getting thin. I said, are you eating enough? And one of the things that we did every time we met in town accidentally or by arrangement, I took him out to eat because he was so thin. And then another thing, he was always so tired. And I said, Sonny, I don't know why Joe is always so tired. He felt tired and he required a lot of sleep. And I knew I figured he was using a lot of energy in the book and he was working at Salad Dally. I figured he's working, he's writing a book, and this is why he was so tired. I did not know he had AIDS.
So when did you actually find out he had
AIDS? I didn't find out until after Joe died and the coroners called me and told me that, because we went down to the coroner's office and my sister and I, and he explained to me what the problem was and why we couldn't see the body and the whole bit. They went through the whole bit with it.
Why do you think your son kept that information from you?
Because my son knew that if I knew that he had AIDS, I would have immediately wanted him to come home. He would have had to give up the apartment. He would have to come home, and I would have to take care of him. And he did not want to do that. He was very independent. And then knowing that I'm a worrywart, if he had told me and remained in Center City, I would have gone crazy. I would have been there practically every day.
I hesitate to ask you this question, but I think it's an important one. Is it possible to describe what it was like to lose your only child?
Oh, it was devastating. When they called me and told me about my son, the landlord where he lived, they called me and told me, well, he said, Miss Beam, I want you to sit down. He said, Joe, we don't think Joe is not well. And I had the police over there because we had to go into the apartment. He said, I'll call you back. He must have called me back in 2 minutes. He said, well, the police were there and they found Joe dead. I said, okay. Thank you. I said, I'll get back in touch. So he gave me the number and right away I called my sister. My sister's the one that starts screaming and hollering. I didn't start to scream. I said to her, Margaret, please, I need your help. Don't go to pieces. So I got myself together, and when my sister came, she has a car, and we immediately started to get things rolling. I was fine all the time. I was getting out the cards all the time that I had the memorial services. Everything went beautiful. I didn't collapse until after everything was over, and I went to pieces. I had to have medical care. Mm-hmm. I had to go to my psychiatrist, the whole bit, because I had held it all within me, and my face broke all out. I had to go to dermatologist. In fact, when I went, I had to wear a cloth or scarf over my head because my face was so bad, I couldn't show my face in public. I had to stay home because I couldn't go out, and my nerves were shot to pieces. I couldn't sleep. It seems to me that I was awake all the time. And when I would try to go to sleep, I couldn't. I couldn't go to sleep. And my husband said, well, you will just have to try to get yourself together. Mm-hmm. I said, no. So for a whole year, I was in there and I was suffering on the inside. But when somebody would call up, I'd try to, oh, how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing well. But I was so sick and my hands were all broke out. It was nerves and the emotion was coming out in my skin. And the only thing I could do was eat, which was the worst thing. But it was like a nervous, I was just constantly eating all the time.
Tell me what it was like for you to begin to go through your son's manuscripts, his letters, his photographs, the things that he kept, which then became part of this second anthology of Black Gay Writing.
That was really a traumatic experience. And my husband was there with me, and well, it took us I'd say it took a couple of weeks because I had to go through everything and read through. And the more I read, the worse I kept feeling. And then the depression sets in all over again. And I'd have to read some days, and then I'd have to put the folders away, and then I'd have to go back again.
What made you decide that you wanted to complete what your son had started, which was a second anthology of Black gay writing? What made you think that you could do this?
Well, at first, I didn't think I could do it. That's why I enlisted the help of Essex Hemphill. I'm not a writer. So I said, I have to get someone who I have a feeling that can do the job. And the way I got a hold of Essex was by going through the papers. Because as I went through the papers, he and my son had corresponded a lot. I mean, a lot. And Joe had some of Essex poetry in there. And the rhythm and the letters, the intent of the letters told me that they had a very good relationship going. Then on top of that, when Joe used to go to Washington, he used to stay with Essex. He said, Mother, I stayed with Essex Hemphill. Well, I didn't know Essex Hemphill from anybody, but I remember him saying I stayed at Essex apartment while I was in Washington.
And Essex Hemphill is the editor of this second anthology.
Yes.
You and he then worked together.
We worked together. He lived at my house for 2 years, almost 3 years, and we finished it.
Would you call him your second son?
Well, that's what my husband used to say to me all the time. He said, you really treat Essex like he's your son, and he's got a mother. I don't think his mother's going to like this. Yeah, he used to tell me all the time that he didn't think Essex's mother would like this, that you're trying to take her son away from her. I said, well, no, I'm not really trying to take her son away from her. I said, but Essex has been, he has been a help. If it hadn't been for Essex, I wouldn't have known who to get. I didn't know who, if I hadn't gone through the papers, I wouldn't have known, because I didn't know all my son's friends. I was lucky to get Essex.
I want to take a short break, and let me just reintroduce you. And I'm speaking today with Dorothy Beam, and she's a retired Philadelphia guidance counselor. And we're talking about her son, Joe Beam, who died 3 years ago. He was a writer, and before he died, was in the process of editing his second anthology of Black gay writing. Dorothy Beam continued his work along with Essex Hemphill, and now Brother to Brother is out and it's published. And Joe Beam's first anthology of Black gay writing is called In the Life. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Dorothy Beam, and we're talking about her son, Joe Beam, who was a writer, and about the work that she has continued, and this is his work that she has continued. She was involved in the editing of a second anthology of Black gay writing. I must ask you, looking through this anthology, which I did, what it was like for you to read some of these essays, some of these very personal stories, some of them very sexually graphic. Mm. And as a mother, looking into, I guess, a life that your son must have left, had led, what was that like for you?
Well, I'll tell you, it was an educational experience, because some of the things that I read about in those books, I didn't even know it happened in the world. I mean, it was like an eye-opener. And then after I read it, I was glad I wrote it, because I feel if we don't know what's going on the other side of the mountain, then we can't help those people. So in reading the books, I have learned a lot that in my wildest dreams I would have never known, because I would, if I had talked to someone, they would not have talked that explicit to me. First thing, I'm an older person, and then being a female, they would have held back. But in writing the book, they came out with their knowledge and their sorrows and their joys, and they were very pacific about it. So through that, I learned a lot.
So you were not shocked?
Oh, no. I wasn't shocked. I was shocked that I didn't know more about what was going on in the gay community. I felt, as I told a couple people, it was a learning experience for me. I didn't even know all these things went on. Oh, my God. I said, I can't believe this. But the things that they wrote about were true and factual, and it was an education. I would have never gotten it other than through Brother to Brother, because I wouldn't pick up those books and read them ordinarily.
Well, I must tell you that I'm absolutely amazed by your open-mindedness, because I think many parents, it doesn't matter whether their children were straight or gay, wouldn't necessarily want to know the kind of sexual activities that they were involved in, or some of the deep, darker side of their personal life.
Well, I didn't want to know it. I wouldn't have gone out. I wouldn't have gone out and purchased Brother to Brother if my son hadn't been gay. But because my son was gay, I had to know what's going on in the gay world. And that was the only way I could find out, is by reading the book. Otherwise, I would have never known all the things that happen in the gay community. But I'm better off for knowing. I'm better off for knowing the troubles, the trials, and the tribulations. And I'm better off for knowing what their sexual desires are. Because now that it's necessary for everyone to practice safe sex. How can you practice safe sex if you don't know what they're doing? This way, if you say to someone, practice safe sex, you know what you're talking about. So it was a revelation and an education for me. And brother to brother, when I tell people about it, I said, listen, there are a lot of uncomfortable things in there. But it's only through this discomfort that you're going to learn the same way I learned.
Here you are. You're in your 60s. You've retired from...
Yes, I'm 68 today. It's my birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
That's great.
Yes.
Did you think that this is what your retirement was going to be like?
No. I said to my husband, when I retire, we're going to go to Las Vegas. We're going to go to the Bahamas. And we're just going to travel around because I've never been out of the country. He says, a good idea. But... It was not in the cards. I can't travel around unless I travel around for the books. But you see, out of this experience, I'm getting a lot. I'm meeting a lot of people. There are people that I have met that, under ordinary circumstances, I would have never met them, because I wouldn't have been in that particular company. So I have met a lot of fine people.
Do you feel then you're a part of the gay and lesbian community?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. In fact, I get calls every day from somebody that needs some kind of advice, somebody that needs help, just someone to talk to. And they feel that they can talk to me because I understand. Perhaps they can't even, many of them can't talk to their own parents. But they know, well, if I call Miss Beam, I can talk to her and she will understand. Because I've been through this. I had a gay son. So I know what they're going through. And then the book helped me to understand the many things, the fears that they have.
Have you been surprised to discover who your son was? And I'm thinking about the kind of contact and the kind of community that he was involved in, but also the effect that he had on the world. Here in Philadelphia, there was a Joe Beam Day.
Yeah.
There are libraries that are interested in his work. Does that surprise you?
It took me by surprise. In fact, the whole business took me by surprise because I knew my son knew a lot of people, but I did not know he knew thousands. He had a small file box. It must have been 3,000 addresses in there. And when the ladies came down, the gay people came to help me with all the writing. They could not believe. The box was about, 10 or 12 inches. It was like a little file box. And it had nothing but 3x5 cards in there from everywhere in the United States and out of the country. I was overwhelmed. I could not believe that my son knew all these people. And then I could not believe that they knew him. And as I go, I was in Reading Terminal and I give out the papers about my son. And I said to this young man, my, you're a very nice person. And it's a beautiful coat you're wearing. And I said, if my son had lived, this is the kind of coat that he would have worn. He said, really? And I said, I took a paper out and I said, my son was Joe Beam. He said, I knew Joe Beam. There's a perfect stranger, but everywhere I go, I talk about my son. The young man said, I knew Joe Beam.
It's obvious that your life has changed a lot.
Yes, ma'am.
Since your son died.
Yes.
Do you feel like you really have then embarked on a completely new chapter in your life, or do you feel that you're sort of mixing things from your past and your old life and working them into your new life now?
No, I think that, you see, out of everything bad, something good happens. Now, if my son had not passed, I wouldn't even be involved with this. But here I was retiring from school, and see, everything worked out because I had retired from school, and then my son passed, which was a traumatic shock, but God gave me something else to do. So I feel that this is a challenge. This is the way God has prepared for me to go, and I just thank the Lord that my health is getting better, my nerves are calming down, and I can go places and do things. This is what this was what God had prepared for me that I didn't even know about. I did not know I had to rise to the challenge of putting the book out, talking to parents, and helping parents to overcome their, because many of our young people, our young people are dying, and parents are trying to cope with that every day. I didn't know I would be a solace or comfort to someone else. I had no idea, because I was looking for comfort myself. But now I have to help others.
Are you a different person because of all
this? Oh, my goodness, yes. Yes, I am. I think I'm a much better person.
Do you?
Yes, because I would have never thought of running around like this before. To comfort anybody, I would have sent a card, I would have sent maybe flowers, whatever I could have done, I would have, but I would not have gone to visit, and I wouldn't have called people on the phone and extended myself. And now I extend myself to everyone. I'd be away somewhere on a cruise, you know, I would be doing something different. Really, I would, you know, I really would not be around, and I would have moved and got myself a condo. I would be living what you call the good life, but the good life is not always the best life. The good life is sometimes a boring life. This is better. I'm helping others.
Do you think that your son had any idea that you actually might be going through his material, his writings? He knew he was dying.
Oh yes,
you
yes,
didn't
I had
know
that
he was
feeling.
Dying.
Yeah, yeah. I had
but
that,
did
yeah.
did you think since he saved everything that he knew you were going to come and look through his stuff?
Yes, I would imagine. See, I was a teacher, and my son knew that I saved everything, too. I save every bits of paper. Teachers do that. So he would think to himself, if I save everything, I know my mother will go through. She's that kind of a mother, because she wants to know everything that's happening. Yes, he would say, yes, my mother would go through all this. And I told his dad, I said, if Joe is in heaven, and I feel that he is, he's smiling, he's looking down, smiling down, because he says to himself, I knew that my mother would carry on if anything happened to me, because he had that kind of a mother. I would carry on.
Well, I thank you so much, Dorothy Beam, for joining us today. Thank you. Dorothy Beam served as project manager for her late son's book, Brother to Brother, New Writings by Black Gay Men. Essex Hempel was the editor. The book is published by Allison Publications in Boston. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.